And let's talk a bit of Alex de Minaur once again. He has taken world number 5, Alexander Zverev, to a 5-set tiebreak. Let's hear from him post-match.
I left it all out there, gave it 110% and was that close to getting that first rubber. Oh, it was honestly the best 4 hours of my life. I enjoyed every second of it. I really didn't want it to end. Things like this don't happen often, so I cherished every second of it, and you know, hopefully next time I'm able to close out those important rubbers. He was incredibly proud. He was trying to sort of get me to not think about it as much. You know, obviously I was devastated, and he was trying to just tell me how proud he was of the effort I gave and just the level I brought out on court. You know, you got to look at the positives, and it's always tough in a situation like this, but I'm happy with the level I brought out there. You know, I kept him out there for 4 hours. Some grueling points, you know. We both did a lot of running, and I'm happy with my effort.
Yeah, Alex de Minaur there. If you're just tuning in, he's taken world number 5, Alexander Zverev, to a 5-set tiebreak. Unfortunately, lost Australia one love down in the tie, but Bernatomic has taken the first set in his rubber. Let's go to the top now. This man wrote half the newspaper during the 2 weeks of the Australian Open. He's the chief tennis reporter for the Herald Sun. I speak, of course, of Leo Schlink. Leo, good evening. Welcome to Time On. What a day for Alex de Minaur.
Fantastic debut for Alex. Unfortunately, he didn't get the win that he deserves. But, Sam, if ever there's been a tennis player who's been born to play Davis Cup, it's Alex de Minaur. Mm. And he's got all the right influences around him. And he showed today why he's going to be such an important part of the Davis Cup campaign for Australia going forward.
Did he remind you a little bit of a young Leighton Hewitt, Leo, as you're watching?
He certainly does. He internalises the intensity a bit, but he's certainly not as vocal as Leighton, but and probably as expressive as Leighton, but the fire burns just as fierce. And this guy's only 18, and when you think back to Leighton, he made his Davis Cup debut in 1999 against the Americans in the top flight, and went out there and destroyed Todd Martin in probably one of the greatest Davis Cup debuts of all time. This young fella today, Alex, he just missed out on that against the world number 5, and just goes to show what he did during the Australian summer, winning the wildcard playoff, which there was a little asterisk against that to start with. But then when you get to the semi-finals of Brisbane, the final of Sydney, you take a set off Thomas Berdych at the Australian Open under, you know, in big stage. And today what he did, that just franks the form.
Mm. Speaking to Leo Schlink, the chief tennis writer at the Herald Sun, some feedback on the SMS. Apparently I said Bernatomic took the first set in his rubber. Well, I clearly have Bernatomic on my mind. He didn't. He's not in the team, if you hadn't noticed. It's, of course, Nick Kyrgios against Jan Lennard Struff, taking the first set 6-4. It is 1-1 in the second. Leo, tell us about de Minaur's background. A lot of people still wouldn't know heaps about him.
He almost was plucked away by Spain. He's of Uruguayan and Spanish heritage, born in Sydney, identifies very heavily with the New South Wales Blues, and I think Laurie Daly's had a bit to do with him. He likes to reprise the blue wall when he talks about his defence on court, and you saw plenty of that today. And there was a time when Spanish tennis did have a look at him, and I think Todd Woodbridge was really instrumental in him coming and plumping for Australia. A couple of years ago, he made the Wimbledon final in the boys there and lost to Shapovalov, who, as we know now, is a very, very fine young player himself.
Yeah.
So this kid can play. He's developing physically almost by the week. Last year, I think he won 2 matches on the ATP Grand Slam circuit. This year, I think he's won something like 7 already, and he's ranking as a career high. And he's someone that Australia can build its Davis Cup future around.
Well, that's the thing I wanted to ask you next, and the last thing I wanted to ask you, Leo, the building of the Davis Cup team. I mean, not to harp on this at all, but we all, of course, know that Bernatomic said that Australia couldn't win the Davis Cup without him. And I think a lot of people, you know, were wondering who was going to be the next youngster behind Nick Kyrgios to take the next step. and B, Australia's number two. Is it too far to say after that that we found him?
Look, I think he is putting himself right there. I think we have found him. And look, Jordan Thompson has lost form. What he did for Australia last year as the number two was phenomenal.
Yep.
Matt Ebden's coming back. John Millman is an excellent player. So there are options there. And then you go a little bit further down the track, Sam, and you've got Alex Popperin, the running French boys champion, who I think when he develops and matures, he's going to be a really good player for Australia as well. So as far as Bernard Tomic goes, he is so far off the pace right now, it's not funny.
And just to leave us with one more, Leo, how is this tie going to play out?
Australia, I think, will win. Well, it'll be one all, I think, all being equal here with Nick.
Yep.
I think we'll win the doubles, and I think Nick wins it, seals it for us 3-1.
So Nick to beat Alexander Zverev in the reverse singles.
Yeah, I think what Alex didn't get the job done today in terms of a rubber for Australia, but I think he's really damaged Zverev, and hopefully Nick can get the two singles wins for Australia, and we get up with Piers and Ebden tomorrow.
Leo, we appreciate your time. Thanks so much for it. We look forward to reading your coverage in the Herald Sun across the weekend, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Sam. Cheers.
Leo Schlink there, the chief Herald Sun journalist when it comes to tennis and also racing. Alex Demonor, wow, he has certainly announced himself today. 9429 1116, 0433 98 1116. Have we found our number two in Davis Cup tennis behind Nick Kyrgios, or are we speaking too soon? Let's talk a bit of cricket. There's so much going on and is getting into the pointy end of the Big Bash. We've had the privilege of being joined by not only an Australian cricket legend, not only a national selector, but also commentator extraordinaire with Channel 10 and the Big Bash. We speak of Mark Waugh. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Good to talk to you.
Mark, let's start with the boil over last night. I think everyone not only penciled the Perth Scorchers in the grand final, I think they might have use some permanent ink, but not to be. The Hurricanes too good.
Yeah, well, I actually tipped the Hurricanes. I
might, did you really?
One, but I did. Yeah, I just look. I think T20 is that sort of game where it only takes one or two players to come off, and you can win the game. So yep. I mean, it's been amazing that the Scorchers have been so dominant in this format. But last night, Matthew Wade, geez, he played out of his skin, and that really his innings really set up that win for the Hurricanes. And then Ben McDermott, his 60 at the end. Got that score, and then just too much pressure, too much scoreboard pressure for the Scorchers in front of a very good crowd too, off the stadium. Great venue, unfortunately. Yeah. They didn't get the result they wanted.
Mark, now that we look at it, five of the seven minor premiers in the Big Bash have failed to make the grand final. I know Adam Gilchrist has mentioned this. Do we need to rethink the final structure? Does the team that finished first, should they have a better advantage?
Well, they get home advantage. I suppose you're looking at another game where if they did happen to lose that game, they get another crack at the semi-final I'm talking about. But I suppose at the end of the day, you know, you're playing semi-final. You know, you got a chance to win it. You got a 50-50 chance of winning it. So, yeah, maybe. I mean, the advantage is home ground, but that's, I suppose, the only advantage of running first. But you're supposed to be the best team. Yeah, look, I'm happy either way. I wouldn't disagree with a bit of a restructure there, but I suppose it's just fitting in the extra game. And they're already talking about more games next season. So, yeah, we'll wait and see. But, yeah, it's obviously disappointing if you do go through and win a lot of games in the round matches, then lose the semi-final and you're out. So, unfortunate, but I guess you do get your chance to still win the semi.
Righto, let's move on to tonight. The Strikers and the Renegades. How's this one going to pan out?
Yeah, real tight game. I reckon this is a real 50-50 call. Both teams match up pretty well. Both teams have got players in and out with Australian duty and whatever. I just probably see it coming down to maybe the overseas players having the biggest influence. You know, your Colm Ingrams, Rashid Khan for the Strikers, and the two West Indians, Bravo and Pollard for the Renegades. So that clash could be vital. But once again, I just think it's execution under pressure. Which team is best under pressure? I mean, the Strikers have got home ground advantage. As far as that is concerned, the crowd are going to be very good and very parochial there in Adelaide. So whether that has an effect, but yeah, real tough one, real tight one to call. I tipped the Renegades at the start to win the comp, so
okay.
I suppose we've got to stick with them and, you know, maybe cheer them on tonight. But, you know, looking forward to the game. It should be a high-quality contest.
Yeah, well, given last night's tip, you're in good tipping form. Mark, let's just ask you as a selector about the Travis Head situation. I'm sure you've heard a lot of the response from pundits and from media people in the last 24 hours. Can you explain it from a selector's perspective about Travis Head being allowed to return for the Strikers?
Well, I mean, it's seems common sense, doesn't it? We picked the 11 for the Sydney game, the Australian game. So given that, we thought it was only fair that, you know, you let him play. Why not? He can travel back to Adelaide from Sydney, and then after the game he can come back to Sydney on Saturday morning, you know, in case there's an injury to the Australian squad. So I just think, yeah, why not? You know, the chances there for him to play. He's, you know, it's a 20-over game, so he's obviously unlucky to miss out in the you know, the batting order in the Australian squad, but, which is very strong. But you know, gets a second chance, gets another chance to play for Adelaide, which, you know, I'm sure, you know, if you can get that opportunity and get the Australian players, if they're not playing, why not let them play? So yeah, I think it's common sense.
I think there seems to be, certainly from opposition perspective, you know, with speaking to the Renegades yesterday, some confusion around, you know, whether players in national squads either allowed to or not allowed to play domestically in the T20. Is it clear enough from your perspective, or does there need to be a hard and fast rule?
No, I don't think so. I think you use common sense. You know, it depends on, obviously, the venues that the games are at, how, you know, how much travel's involved, whether they're bowlers or batsmen, that can play a bit of a part, how much cricket they've played. There's a whole you know, list of things that come into it. I haven't seen the criticism, and it's obviously from the Renegades, is it, that Travis Head's playing. So I haven't seen that. I was flying back from Perth last night. But, you know, I think where you can, why not let players, you know, play if it suits. So I don't think there needs to be a hard and fast rule. I think it's common sense is the rule that applies. So that's what's happened here.
Not an easy job, I assume, Mark. And if you're just joining us here on Time On, we're speaking to Australian selector and former great Mark Wall. What have you found the most difficult thing about being a national selector? Has it been that, you know, you've also got to do media as well?
Not really. I mean, it's a game of sports. I mean, you know, I think sometimes people take it too far. I mean, the hardest thing about being a selector is, I guess, juggling the three formats and crossing over of the formats. That's the most difficult thing. For example, obviously the Australian T20 is coming up. We've got players that are going to South Africa early to prepare for the test. So there's probably a few players there that would be normally in the team. So that's probably the hardest thing, juggling the three formats. I mean, you're always going to get criticism and people have got opinions on selection. But at the end of the day, as selectors, you know, we watch a lot of cricket. We try and pick the best team that's going to win you a certain game. And that's what, you know, we do. So, I mean, you cop the criticism on the chin and move forward and just hope the players you pick succeed, and for their own sake and obviously for the success of the team. So, you know, it's never easy, but, you know, we get paid to do the job and that we try and do it the best we can.
Aaron Finch ruled out for the Aussies with a hammy. Would you expect Darcy Shaw to open with Davey Warner?
Yeah, look, I would. I'd like to see Darcy Shaw open the innings, but at the end of the day, that's up to the captain and probably the coach to set the order. But yeah, quite often in T20 for Australia, a lot of your better players are all bat at the top of the order, don't they, in domestic cricket, so in the Big Bash. But, I mean, Darcy Shaw's been magnificent at the top of the order, so without knowing 100%, you know, I think he'd probably bat at the top with Davey Warner. You've got Chris Lynn there as well. So, you know, there's three tremendous top-order players. And Alex Carey, he's open really well for the strikers as well. So there's plenty of options there. But no, I'm looking forward to Darcy Short playing. I mean, he's one of those selections that sort of not come from nowhere, but he sort of come onto the scene very quickly, a bit like David Warner years ago. So,
well, yeah, you said earlier, I think, on the Big Bash coverage on Channel 10 that he reminded you of a young David Warner.
Yeah, well, just the way he plays. You know, he's a left-hander, obviously. You know, he's such a clean ball striker. He hits the ball very hard and very clean. There's, you know, he's got a simple game plan. He just sort of stands there and hits it. So in a lot of ways, you know, he's rushed onto the scene a bit like David did with his sort of T20 format, sort of got him exposed to the wider public and obviously to, you know, fellow cricketers. You know, his format of T20 has got him going, and hopefully it does the same for Darcy Short.
Okay, last one, Mark. Business end now and the pressure's on. The result tonight and the result as BBL 7 champions, please.
Well, I did tip the Renegades to win it, so
yep.
They're not there yet. So, look, I'll stick with them, obviously.
But Renegades tonight and Renegades in the final.
Well, let's stick by that. But anything can happen. We saw last night the Hurricanes beat the Scorchers. I think that's the beauty of T20 cricket. It all comes down to one or two players, you know, executing under pressure. So anything's possible. But, you know, I've got to keep the Renegades fans happy. They don't sound like they're too happy with me. So we'll go for the Renegades.
If they win tonight, they'll be very happy with you. Are you calling tonight's game or are they giving you a break after the Perth trip?
Night off tonight. So, yeah, we're calling Sunday's game. So looking forward to watching it at home.
It's been another great competition, Mark, and the coverage by Channel 10 is fantastic and you're a massive part of that. Thanks so much for joining us. Well done on the season. And we hope it's another great semi tonight and another big final.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. Good to talk to you.
Welcome back to Time On. Sam McLeod with you. It's 20 minutes to 7. I've got you right up until 7 o'clock. Well, we all know what's going on tonight. It is the launch of AFLW Season 2. It was a lockout last year at Icon Park, of course, Princes Park, between the old rivals Carlton and Collingwood. I wonder if it's going to be another lockout tonight. Let's cross to Icon Park, and we're joined by Andrew McKay, Carlton's head of footy. Hello, Andrew.
Evening, Sam. How are you going?
Really well. Andrew, paint us a bit of a picture. If you can, what's the crowd like?
Yeah, it's looking pretty healthy at the moment. There's still quite a few outside that are streaming in, so I wouldn't be surprised if it fills up tonight. So certainly a fantastic atmosphere, that's for sure.
Andrew, has this taken you by surprise? I mean, given what happened at that venue 12 months ago?
Yeah, well, certainly I think that was a surprise how many people turned up, but we understand that was the first ever game, so I think... you know, that, I think a few more people probably were going to go to that game than perhaps tonight, but we'll wait and see. I mean, we're a bit more prepared this year. We've got a site outside the ground, a live site with big screen and food trucks and all that, just in case there is a lockout. But I wouldn't imagine there would be a lockout, but I think it'll still be a pretty decent crowd.
Macca, are you expecting the standard to be significantly higher this season than last year, or is that too big a jump, do you think?
I think there will be an improvement, Sam, definitely. Another pre-season under the girls' belts. And they're certainly, talking from our point of view, we've been working on a lot of ball movement, which has been really important for us. Last year, we worked on a lot of the defence because, obviously, we built our game around that, but certainly worked on a lot of ball movement. We played the Bullies in a trial game a couple of weeks ago, and we moved the ball pretty well. So I think the standard over the next few years will keep on improving, for sure.
So it just would be an unmitigated disaster if you lost to the old rival here tonight at the home ground.
No, we don't want to do that, Sam. You know that. I'm quietly confident, but I'm sure Collingwood are going to give us a run for our money. But it'll be a great game. It's a beautiful night, and going to be a lot of people here, and everyone's pretty excited.
Taylor Harris and Darcy Vesio, that's going to be a pretty star-studded forward line.
Yeah, it is. And they bring different things.
Yep.
You know, Taylor leads up really, really, really hard and provides that contested marking contest. And then Darce is more that little short lead, closer to the goal square and a bit more of a goal sneak. So, yeah, it's a versatile forward line, and I'm hoping it works well tonight.
As we let you go, Andrew, and this is Andrew McKay, head of footy at the Carlton Footy Club, ahead of tonight's AFLW season opener. What about men's footy? It gets underway in a couple of weeks' time with AFLX. We've had a few clubs announced today that they're going to have a different captain, different coach. Anything going on at the Blues that we should know about?
Yeah, we're still working through that one. It's going to be an interesting exercise, AFLX, with, you know, obviously lots smaller team, lots smaller ground, some different rules and... that you know, six teams playing on the same night. So it's going to be interesting. We'll give some coaches some more experience and things like that, but we'll just yet to finalise it.
Andrew, thanks for jumping on the phone. Good luck tonight and good luck for the rest of the year.
Yeah, thanks very much, Sam. And just credit to all the Carlton people coming down tonight. And if anyone's thinking about coming, certainly I'm sure there'll be some room, some empty seats somewhere around the ground tonight. We need this ground full.
Good to hear. Thanks, Andrew. Andrew McKay there, head of footy at the Carlton Footy Club. And now it's time for this.
I left it all out there, gave it 110% and was that close to getting that first rubber. Oh, it was honestly the best 4 hours of my life.
Yeah, Alex Demonor there pushing Alexander Zverev, the world number 5, to 5 sets in the Davis Cup. What a performance it was from the 18-year-old. Let's go to Wally Masur, Tennis Australia Director of Performance and a friend here at Time On. Wally, you've been a hard man to get a hold of, very much, I'm sure, caught up in the moment with Alex Demonor.
Yeah, look, it was a good afternoon. You know, he's been around the Davis Cup team for a while now. You know, Leighton and Jason have had him earmarked as a talented young kid, so he's been a hitting partner for the Davis Cup team over the last year and a half, but he got his chance today. And we know he's good. We saw that over the Australian summer. We know he's competitive, and he was both of those things today. But I think, look, ultimately, Zverev got his act together and just, you know, played a little too good right at the end. But, you know, it was a good match from start to finish. Good quality tennis.
We were speaking to Leo Schlink earlier in the show, Wally, asking the question, and be great to direct it at you. Have we found Australia's Davis Cup number two with the performance like that?
Oh, look, yeah. I mean, if he'll continue to improve. Let's not forget he's 18. He weighs about 60 kilos. So he's got a bit of growing to do, and he's only going to get better. But I just kind of like the way it's shaping up now. I mean, Jordan Thompson, who was the incumbent, he was dropped from the team, so he's pretty disappointed. John Millman, Matt Ebden have made the team. You've got to remember Thanasi Kokkinakis has a slight pec strain at the moment, so he's out. So I guess it's the reality that, what you would like, you know, you were talking footy a moment ago, when we're talking tennis, and we're talking in a team environment, you want that really competitive situation where everybody's just making everybody better. And, you know, I kind of said to Geordie, disappointing, but you just got to get better. It's as simple as that. You know, you want to fight your way back into the team, you're not going to get it given to you. So I think it's probably in a good place, as good a place as we've been for a while. And you always need that that champion or that spearhead. And I think we've got that in Nick Kyrgios. And then the rest of them are just jockeying for that number two spot, and hopefully, yeah, they're all getting better in the process.
Ben, a few comparisons Wally made today with Demonor and a young Leighton Hewitt. Do you see that?
Yeah, there's definitely that that energy, the ability just to make one more ball, to chase, to fight. He's certainly got a lot of that about him. I mean, they have a very different game style, in the sense that Alex is probably, he's quicker to get to the net and seize that opportunity than Leighton was at the same age. But yeah, there's certainly a lot of similarities in their on-court persona. There's no doubt about that. And I can't help but get the feeling when Leighton's watching Alex Diminar out there, he's winding the clock back, you know, 20 odd years and seeing a bit of himself in that performance. But it's been encouraging for Australian tennis, obviously. We have some good players, and then you get a young 18-year-old come up like that. And if you're John Millman or Jordan Thompson or Thanasi Kokkinakis, the last thing you want to do is be overtaken by an 18-year-old. So what do? You put your foot down and go that little bit harder. So that's kind of the dynamic that's being created.
Who's in his team, Wally? Who's in Demonor's corner?
He spends a lot of time in Spain, which he has a Uruguayan father and a Spanish mother, so they're based in Spain. But look, he's on the road a fair bit. He has a Spanish coach for the majority of the year, but when he comes down to Australia in November, he does a big pre-season with Leighton and Jason and the Davis Cup team, and he spends about 3 months of the summer here in Australia, and he does a lot of he does kind of where he does his physical block. So he's got a pretty good setup at the moment. But look, like a lot of good tennis players, he's fairly certain about how he wants to play. There's no tactical conversations going on other than a bit of an analysis of the opponent. Technically, he's pretty sound. He finds the middle of the racket. It's a little bit funky on the forehand, but no one's going to toy with that now.
Yep.
And it's really just a question of those physical blocks, you know, putting another brick in the wall so that come 22, 23, we start to see, you know, the boy becomes a man and he's ready to play. His very best tennis is coming.
Nick Kyrgios is up two sets to love. He's won the first two sets 6-4, 6-4 against the world number 157, Jan-Lennard Struff. You would think, Wally, without tempting fate, that that takes us to one rubber all. It's a very, very important doubles rubber tomorrow.
Yeah, it's amazing the Davis Cup. Such an unusual competition. Obviously, there's four singles and one doubles, but just the way that it's placed right in the middle of the tie,
yeah.
It's like a tipping point. You know, the thing, the pendulum swings. Look, I don't want to preempt anything, but you would suggest Nick at two sets love. And I think at the start of the day, a lot of people thought it would be one all, but
yeah,
maybe not as dramatically close as it was. But we'll see how it plays out. But look, the doubles invariably becomes important. It's a real psychological damage. It can be done to the team that goes down 2-1 on day two. That can sort of play on your mind. But I think we've got the best doubles player in John Peers.
Is he the best in the world, Wally?
Well, he has been. He's not right at the minute, but he and Contin have been the best player and the best team at certain times. But, I'm pretty happy. You know, Matt Ebden plays good doubles. I'm reasonably confident of the doubles, but you know, it's such a quick fire, rapid game doubles these days that a lot of it can hinge on a tie break or, you know, a couple of quick points here and there. There's not much in it, and yeah, there's always that little bit of added pressure. It's the only match that's played on the Saturday, so tension tends to build, and I think it'll be pretty important in this tie.
Wally, we appreciate your time as always here on Time On. It's going to be a riveting tie, no doubt about that. Hopefully we can come out the other end, and it's just been fantastic watching the birth of Alex de Minaur on the world stage in the last few months. We appreciate it.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm sort of enjoyed it too. I've known the kid since he's about 12 years of age. It's, you know, as I have with Jordan Thompson, it's just nice to see these kids push through and be engaging, you know, really good professional tennis players, and I think they'll help lift the profile of the sport in the country.
Thanks, Will. Enjoy the weekend.
Good on you, mate. Thanks.
Wally Mazur there, former Davis Cup captain, of course, Australian Director of Performance at Tennis Australia. Alex de Minaur, what a performance. Time On, thanks to Master Builders Training Victoria. Short courses now available. Visit mbavtraining.com.au. 9429 1116 0433 98 1116.
That competitive juices firing pies, that's exactly what you want. You don't want guys, you rather have little biffs here when teammates are getting a bit angry at each other, but it's actually competitive. It's going to help us get better. So that's what you want. Just the team looking after the guy, tagging him. If he's getting hit, we're right in there after him.
We're encouraging the guys to, you know, get into him like it's a final, and obviously the teammates are looking after him as well on the same team. So it's been a few niggles, which has been good.
Welcome back to Time On. As we come up to the 7 o'clock news, the Bombers promising a physical and unsociable brand of footy in 2018. David Zaharakis, by the way, to captain their side for AFLX. Hayden Skipworth will coach. Danaher, Heppel, Bell Chambers and Leuenberger all will not play in AFLX. And I dare say they're not going to be the only stars in different teams who will decide to miss. Late change tonight, by the way, for the AFLW game. Jess Duffin for Collingwood is out with an adductor. Ruby Schleicher comes in. No change for Carlton. They go in as selected. Some more red time headlines. Melbourne strategist Craig Jennings will coach the Dees for their AFLX competition. You heard Andrew McKay just a few minutes ago saying that they're still finalising what they're going to do. It makes sense that someone else coaches. I mean, there are different sides. Alistair Clarkson's done it with Hawthorn, that do it with the JLT, or the pre-season competition, as it's better known. Coach someone else, it makes no sense that the regular coach would do it. So I dare say someone other than Brendan Bolton, maybe John Barker, will coach the AFLX campaign for the Blues. Alex Witherden, if we go north to Queensland. Alex Witherden, the Brisbane Lions young star, has re-signed with them until the end of 2020. And is this a backhander from Tim Cahill to the A-League? He fronted the cameras for the first time as a Millwall player.
Regardless of age, what do you want as a footballer? Do you want to stay in the A-League, or do you want to try your hardest to play at the highest level and be competitive in the World Cup?
It's a little backhander, but at the same time, I think he's just being honest. Clearly, the A-League's not as a similar standard to that in Europe, and he's played all over the world and been successful all over the world. And by the way, keeping with soccer, Victory coach Kevin Muscat again refusing to be drawn on the details of Mark Milligan's departure.
Yes, he's gone. I'm not saying it wasn't disappointing. I've admitted that. It's disappointing. But we move on. And we've got a big game to look forward to tomorrow.
I think Kevin Muscat is a great friend to this station and always very generous with his time. I think Muscat has to be a bit better with that. He You know, fans want to know the answer to these questions. What went on with Mark Milligan? And I just think he should be honest. If they were offered more money after originally receiving a lowball offer from the Saudi Arabia club, then he should just be honest. I don't think it should be as simple as that, but that's just an opinion. There's the siren, by the way, as we head up to the 7 o'clock news. The final siren of the week. No official word yet on whether it's going to be a lockout at Icon Park, by the way. If you're looking to get along, get down there right now. It will be live right here on 1116 SEN from 7:30.